Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. Are you free enough to speak truth to power? That's a loaded question. And most people, if they're honest, will have to admit that we're not. I mean, we're free enough to like a meme posted on social media. We're free enough to voice our opinion when it's safe to do so. But we're not free enough to rock the boat in our places of employment, or family dynamics, social structures, religious frameworks, or our government. In today's podcast and post, we continue our look at the Sermon on the Mount, and we examine the punchline statement of the whole thing. Join me now as we see beyond what we thought was persecution, and into the disappointing reality that exposes our lives being lived in captivity. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for coming back to yet another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I am so glad that you joined me today. I'm so glad you've given your time to this kind of content. I think it is really going to challenge your thinking. It's going to transform the way you see the world, and I think that is going to change just about everything in a positive way. My name is Kevin Winder. I'm your host. Welcome back to another episode. And welcome to Sunday, as I used to say. Of course, now the podcast comes out on Fridays, usually, although the newsletter does come out on Sunday, as it has since 2012. So if you want to tune in and learn all about it, if you want to see the archives, if you want to see what I've been talking about for the last 7 years, always go to my website, kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7, K-E-V-E-N. Go to kevinwinder.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield. You'll get access to this podcast, to my blog, to all other kinds of things that are going on, the ways that I can try and serve you. I'd love to have you be a part, love to have you sign up, love to have you tell your friends so that you guys can have something interesting to talk about. That's the whole point of this. Today, folks, we are going to continue with our series. We're looking at the Sermon on the Mount, and the title of today's podcast is Power Won't Like This. That's right, podcast number 187, Power Won't Like This. What do I mean by that? Power won't like this. Well, let me first catch everybody up if you haven't tuned in the last couple weeks, or if you're brand new to the podcast. The Sermon on the Mount is the most common, most famous sermon ever taught. In fact, most people derive, especially Christian people, derive a lot of their theology, their philosophy of life, their teachings from this. We get a lot of our cultural expressions from this this sermon. We get a lot of our moral ideals from this sermon. And just about every pastor that's ever lived has taught a sermon series on the Sermon on the Mount. In fact, if you want your attendance to go down on Sunday, just announce that you're going to be teaching the Sermon on the Mount or the Beatitudes, and pretty much everybody will glaze over because we all think we've heard this before. And folks, we haven't. At least I thought I had heard it 150,000 times before. That's the way it is. But after reading this text literally more than 100 times, and by the time this series is over, I will have easily read this text more than 200 times. And I can tell you I've read it in the Greek, in the original languages. I've pulled out the nuances. This is saying something so much bigger. And when we lay it into the cultural framework, not only of its time, but then do the hard work of contextualizing this into our modern world, all of a sudden something emerges that is powerful and very important for our modern world. I think it's important for you. And so that's why I'm taking the time to do this, and that's why the study structure is different than perhaps what you've heard before. You've probably heard pastors break it down, talk about it, read the passage, and then just keep talking more and more about it, then open up more Bible passages and talk more and more about it, and then at the end you get 5 minutes of application. Folks, what I'm doing here is I have exploded the text on a big macro scale. And I have taken the key themes and I have worked them and massaged them into what is it saying to the culture of today. I've done all of it. So most of this is contextualization because behind the scenes is all the hermeneutical hard work. So that will help you to be free to just engage in the conversation, just to hear it, just to see how it applies to every listener. You do not have to be a Christian. You do not have to be what you call a person of faith. This is going to reach you. And this is exactly how it was when they would have heard it. It would have reached all hearers when Jesus gave the sermon. So what is this all about? Power won't like this. Well, you know, we don't have to go very far to see that suffering has caused a lot of pain in our world, right? And suffering is often caused by broken systems and institutions. Do you realize that? I mean, last week was all about suffering. Why? Because the Beatitudes, those eight little things, little cookie cutters, fortune cookie statements. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are the mournful. Blessed are the poor in spirit, right? This is all about suffering. And so we're going to take this theme from the first eight pieces, and we're going to explode them into this huge message, which is the punchline of the whole thing. And, you know, when you look at suffering in the world, you realize that suffering is caused by corrupt systems and institutions. And isn't it obvious that our problems are way bigger than a Democratic or a Republican solution? And yet, all we ever hear is that the reason we have problems and pain and suffering in the world is because the Republicans are taking too much of the money, or the Democrats are spending too much of the money. They're wasting it all, right? Folks, we need a bigger solution, right? Do we really need another government solution? I mean, do you think we need a military or a religious solution to the pain and suffering in the world? Do you think the pain and suffering in the world is an economic solution, right? To those who, you know, to favor those in power, right? That's what economic solutions do. They just create larger numbers of dependence upon the state. I mean, look at big pharma, big agriculture, big banking, big oil, big tech. Do you think all these people are going to provide solutions to the pain and suffering in the world? They all act as if they are, but you know that they leave a wake of personal and ecological suffering that's ignored so long as shareholder value goes up. So, folks, this is bigger than an economic solution. And this is how the audience would have heard the Sermon on the Mount. They're like, hey, this guy is talking about this Messiah, this kingdom, this, you know, who's going to come, right? He must be the one who's going to solve all the problems. And so many of them went away disappointed because he didn't offer them a democratic solution. He didn't offer them a government, a religious, or a military solution. He offered something different, right? And just think, what kind of campaign speech could possibly unite our world as it is today? Really, do you really think the candidates that they're rolling up for this next presidential election have a solution? Come on, wake up. I mean, who's going to speak truth to power and survive it? I mean, the world history has been witness to countless men and women who have shown us the way, but their voice was muted. They were killed, right? If we combined the voices of all these messengers into one, we discover that there is really only one message. This is the message that's always being said. This is the voice of speaking truth to power. It always says the same thing. It says, live free and authentically, or else die 1,000 deaths in the captivity of your own reality, right? Live free, live authentically, or die 1,000 deaths in the captivity of your pseudonym, your fake ID. That is what speaking truth to power always says. And institutional power will not welcome a solution to a problem for which it is the cause, right? You don't expect Monsanto, who has been pumping genetically modified organisms, turning corn into a pesticide and then pumping it into the food system since 1996 to turn around and say, you know what, we realize that all of the diseases and gastrointestinal problems that have arisen in our culture are due to the fact that we're putting glyphosate into the food system. It's not going to happen. Big banks are not going to all of a sudden say, you know what, the lack of regulation has let us get a little out of hand, so we're going to rein ourselves in. Institutional power never welcomes a solution to the problem for which it's the cause. Right? Don't expect your new campaign wizard, and don't expect your lovingly political party, which you're so aligned with, to offer a solution that's going to help anybody. It's never going to happen. I'm not being cynical. I'm teaching the truth. See, it's not surprising. When Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount, he also starts with the same thought. You see, last week we saw how the Beatitudes unveiled the wisdom within the paradox of suffering. And today we're going to continue by examining the punchline of the sermon, namely, power will not like it if you become free. Power will not like it if you become free. And so why did he start the Sermon on the Mount that way? And how can I say that that's how he did it? Well, let's talk a little bit about Jewish thought, right? It's circular reasoning, right? This is what is known in the text as a chiasm or chiastic structure. It means cross or X. And it just means that it's kind of a circular pattern. It's in American thought, we basically build on information until we get to the end where we give the punchline. In Jewish thought, where it's more of an oral tradition, you start with the punchline and then you backfill it with a bunch of information. And that's what the Sermon on the Mount does. The Beatitudes are kind of the essence of the backdrop of the punchline, and then they start in reverse order and explain on them all through the next couple of chapters. And so this is then the biggest punchline of them all. And this is what Jesus says in Matthew 5:11-12. He said, "Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." You see, this is Jesus saying power is not going to like this. He's not saying, hey, here I come, I'm going to overpower the powers that are here. He's saying, I've got something and power is not going to like it if I set you free. And is he not just talking about church? He's not just talking about state. He's talking about your family. He's talking about your culture. He's talking about your community, your team, right? Your alliances. If you've become free of those, they're not going to like it. So speaking truth to power is what this is all about. And that's actually the very job description of a prophet. And seeing the truth while under the control of institutional power is really that moment where we wake up. Like, if you can't see the institutional power plays that are being levied against you in your life, then you're still sleeping. You're snoozing through your life. You're under its dominant force. And until that moment of waking up, we're all basically just hooked up to an anesthesia. We've got the IV in our arm, and then it's just pumping us, keeping us asleep, keeping us locked and loaded for whatever the institution would have us to do. Now, people today, just as the audience within the sermon, are waking up, right? We're not sure what to do in order to be free of oppression. And these were oppressed people. And folks, look around you. We are an oppressed people. Now, do you want to be free? Do you want to be healed like Jesus asked the invalid at Solomon's courtyard? Do you want to be free? Really? I mean, we talk about it. Oh, you think of freedom as only economic, financial freedom, right? Or do you want to be free from a miserable relationship or a family dynamic that's just constantly toxic? Do you want to be free of your company that just abuses you and takes your time and doesn't reward very generously? Or is it all just fear? The fear of getting behind, losing out, the fear of missing out, the fear of losing what you've worked so hard for. Is all this stuff just controlling your life? Well, if so, then you're oppressed and you're snoozing. You see, our default mode is to think that if we have economic independence, then we'll become free. Then we just hook up the IV and start competing for wealth. Right? Money makes life convenient and entertaining, certainly, but it doesn't make you free. Money gathered and squandered on your false self or your fake ID is really just the darkest prison that you can be in, because it just anesthetizes you further from the reality of what a prison you're stuck in. And Jesus reveals this paradox of wisdom, which is needed more now than ever, if you ask me. I mean, if we would be free, then we must be first free within, right? And it's this inner spaciousness, this inner awareness, this connection to the source that's going to give us the power to subvert the institutions that imprison us. And this is going to become clearer as we work through this sermon in the weeks to come. But let me just ask you this. Who is your government? Who is your board of directors? Who is your Sanhedrin or your elder board? And who are the people above you? Who are your commanding officers? You see, who has the power over you? Is it your spouse? Is it a family that you've never left because you can't get far enough away from them to be free of their governing, control, their scrutiny, their criticisms, their judgments? Is it your friends, right? Institutional power is this collective energy of individuals who organize around a given purpose. But it can be your own family. It can be your group of friends. You might have terrible friends, and yet you strive to make them happy. You try to impress them. You try and live in a certain way to make them like you. Why? That's a living hell. Maybe your institutional power is your spouse. Maybe it's a team. Maybe it's a league. Maybe it's your religion. Maybe it's your faith system. Maybe you've been going to the wrong church for too long. Everybody just judges you and looks at you and questions you and creates fear, like, and threatens you, essentially. Like, if you ever leave, you know we're going to just abandon you. Maybe it's your state. Maybe it's your government. Maybe you live in a country that is completely oppressive. Maybe it's your place of work, right? These are all the institutions that imprisons us. And at some point in all our lives, we just bump into the controlling forces of institutional power. This, folks, is what evil is. This is why Satan, when he tempted Jesus, said, "I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world," because institutional power was his to give. And Jesus rebutted that temptation and says, "Nope, the way I'm going is going to provide personal power, not institutional power. I'm going to subvert all of that institutional stuff and provide people a way of freedom." Now, if we follow the rules, all of these powers will give us an identity, right? They'll give you some kind of life, some version of a life. But what happens if you start to question it? You see, are you waking up? Because as soon as you recognize the following process, your anesthesia is wearing off. Here's the test. Here's the test if you're just snoozing through life or if you're actually waking up. Right now, when we can finally hear the keynote message of this powerful sermon, we know we're beginning to wake up. See, our suffering world suffers by the corruption and oppression of institutional power, what Jesus calls the kingdoms of this world. The Sermon on the Mount is an invitation to come out and be blessed. But know this, that your blessing will begin with persecution and reviling. You see, if you hold fast to your freedom, then if you continue for the sake of this word, this logos, then hold on, because paradox is going to renew the world. And Jesus is going to show us how. But it's not going to come easy, right? Those who question their institution do so for the sake of something deeply internal. Right, you don't push back against power unless something is really driving you, unless you really see it as for what it is. You have to be awake to push back. And this is the epicenter of spiritual reality, of being. This is ontology. I'm always talking about it. This is the center of your being. And to stray from the herd is to beat to a different drummer. I mean, we each hear our true name being called from outside our tomb. It's our own version of this Lazarus come forth. And no matter where we begin, there's an institution that will try and rein us in. Don't ever miss that reality. You see, as soon as you start to become free, the institution gets a little nervous. You see, it needs you for survival. And we start to think we need it for our survival. And your first sign of waking up is when you realize, I don't care what you give me. I don't want to do this anymore. It's not worth the money you're paying me. It's not worth the pain that I have to deal with to be here. And at first, the institution will always kind of beckon us nicely. Then it'll start to try and draw us back. But then it's going to use doubt. Oh, are you sure you want to do that? Then it's going to use fear. Hey, you know, if you keep going in this direction, here's the threat. We're going to pull back our resources from you. And that's exactly what it does. It redraws the resources that it gave you. It's trying to take back your identity. And see, if you've gained your identity from this institution, if you've gained your identity from being in a marriage, by being named by that family, by having that title, by having that position, if you felt great about yourself by having that level of income or that car, that house, that zip code, whatever it is, then your ability to leave that institution is going to be markedly higher, harder. You see, yeah, it's going to try and take back, and you're going to feel like you're losing yourself. You're going to feel like, gosh, without this job, I don't have me. That's because you took the identity it gave you. You haven't learned who you really are. And if it can't pull you back in, then it turns on you. Mark my words. It vilifies you. It marginalizes you. It sends you into exile. This is true for a family. This is true for your church. This is true for your government. This is true for your business. See, it sends you away. It rebuts you. It drops you. It forsakes you. And if it can't kill you physically, then trust me, it will kill you financially, socially, politically, emotionally, any way that it can. You know, institutional power is not good to you. It doesn't give you your real life. It gives you a fake ID. If you latch on to the fake ID, leaving it will be impossible. You'll stay under its anesthesia forever. This is the Sermon on the Mount, folks. If the voice inside calls you out into the clear, your existential crisis is only just beginning. Because, see, once you kind of hear the voice saying, Kevin, come forth. Kevin, come out. Where are you going to go? What will you do? I mean, who's going to love you? Like, I can remember feeling like I'm being called out of the church delivery system. So where am I going to go as a pastor? What am I supposed to do? I began serving online, just doing what I do, serving and giving it away wherever it will. Well, how am I going to work? How am I going to stay employed? But who cares? I've done every job under the sun to make ends meet. None of them was without honor. Right? They all were honorable, even though in my mind I valued them differently because they all made different amounts of money. But when I finally got free of it, then I was free to be me, do my thing. Like, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Who's going to love you? I mean, will you be alone, abandoned, hungry, or homeless? I mean, essentially, yes, if you would be free. See, all true freedom starts with complete bankruptcy. This is why suffering equals being blessed. This is what Jesus is saying. You know, lunging into another institution is not freedom. It's yet another captor. Like, it's just the same story, like the person who was abused in their relationship and turned around and started dating another abuser. Or they suffered with an addict and then they turn around and join another addict. It's like you gave up the oppression of one company and you moved to another oppressive company who's probably even worse. This is not freedom. You're not moving forward. You're making lateral moves from one captor to the next. But if your voice is calling you out, then this is never acceptable. But when you can accept being alone, when you can face poverty as a real possibility, when you can surrender the outcomes of your biggest hopes and dreams, and when you can see your life for what it really is and what it really isn't, then that's how you know you're hearing your true name. It's who you are without anything. It's without any supporting structures or facades. It's you, just naked, vulnerable, open, yet possessing a strange sense of strength, power, and purpose. This is all behind the Sermon on the Mount. This is all behind this very verse. Blessed are you when people persecute you. You see, you without anything is you, existing, observing, conscious, being. You're a human being. You're not a human doing. This is you transparently grounded in God, your maker. You without anything on the side, without any support structures. You, who you are in your deepest place of being. You are no longer your thoughts, nor are you the thinker of your thoughts. You are the observer of them, and you're free from them. You're not your winnings, and you're not your failings. That was all just window dressing and performance art. You are now free from doing. Your hands are now open. They're not clinging to some pseudonym, a particular outcome. You're not going after this egoic pursuit any longer. You can turn loose and live free of everything that brings you pain. See this, folks? This is liberation. Right? But how do you get there? Well, Jesus is showing us the way. You're going to get there from the inside out. You're going to get there by subverting the institutional power. You're going to get there by following this voice, this call out of your tomb and into the freedom, into a new life. And this process is you stepping into this place of being. It's another step into a kingdom, as Jesus puts it, without definition. It's without racial, political, economic, or social power plays. It's a kingdom of inner spaciousness, a kingdom that has come to you, called you into it. This is the kingdom of heaven. And it's not a destination. It may be one day, sure. Let's just not rule that out. But before it'll ever be an eternity to which we're going, it will always be the eternity from which we live. It's the place from which you now live, if you hear this voice calling you out, if you can speak truth to the powers in your life. You see, like a special lens, this paradox of the kingdom that reframes everything and allows you to see reality as it really is and then forgive it. It's the most free you can actually ever be. Now, do you want to live like that? It's going to cost you something. And that's kind of the point of this whole sermon. It's why so many people, probably in Jesus' hearing, walked away very disappointed. They just wanted a military solution. They just wanted somebody to come and fix it. They just wanted the TED talk, the sermon, the speech that was going to set everything straight. They wanted an authority bigger than the authority that oppresses them to come and make it all work out. And when he told them, "You guys, you can have it now. You can have this inner spaciousness, this kingdom on the inside, but you're going to have to let go of everything that you're so attached to on the outside." See, that paradox of this kingdom, it reframes everything and it allows us to see reality for what it really is. So with a place this amazing, you'd think that everyone would want to get in, but as I've shown you, the entry gate is narrow. It's constricted, thlebo, as we read later in Matthew. Everything false has to be shed, because this is a place of truth, right? And truth means that it can know nothing that's false. And that's what Thomas Merton said, is that the false self is the only thing God knows nothing about. And so the entry into this place of truth, this place of sober reality, it's so much easier to create a surrogate than to actually enter, right? Why not just create a kingdom that seems like it works like that, right? Let's create a place for all of the so-called winners. Then we can all clamor and compete and climb over one another to be at the top, tearing one another apart along with ourselves all the way. That's what we have. That's what we live in. We take the IV, we sleep through the reality of life, and then we just clamor and compete and climb over one another, hurting one another, butchering one another, tearing one another apart along with ourselves, so that we can have what we hope will be success, what we can call living at the top. We just miss the whole point. This is the true cause of all suffering. And so, folks, this is the Sermon on the Mount. And the powers within our world won't like it very much. And I'll tell you what, they didn't like it very much when they first heard it either. It's a very unpopular message. And yet this sermon's power to liberate us is as strong today as it has ever been, if we have ears to hear. May that be the case for you.